Yard Basketball.
Hey Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Rob Senderoff, head men's basketball coach at Kent State University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are going to focus on the men in the middle. No, not the centers, but we're going to talk about the teams that are sandwiched in between the outside of the playoffs, play-in, looking in, and the teams that are in the top four in each conference. So last week we talked about the top and bottom, so this week we're going to talk about the middle. But I believe you have another quiz for me, Jay.
Yeah, I've got another win share quiz for you. So last week we talked about the Nuggets. That was a team in the Western Conference, so I'm going with the team in the Eastern Conference. And I'm going to go with the team we're going to talk a little bit about today, Mike, the Indiana Pacers.
Okay.
So your job is to think of the top five players in Indiana Pacers history based on win shares.
Okay, Reggie Miller.
He's number one.
Paul George.
Paul George is number 11.
Wow. Holy cow. So I'm guessing then we got to go back to the, let's go with, how about Dale Davis?
He's number 3.
Rick Smits.
Rick Smits is number 4.
So what do I have, 3? Do I have 3 right now?
Yeah, you've got 3. I'm going to tell you right now, I've heard of one of the two guys that's left.
Okay. So we've got to go, Chuck Person?
Nope.
Is Chuck Person in the top 12?
Sorry, I was just trying to get some info on this one just to kind of give you a little bit of a hint if I needed to. Chuck Person is, I don't believe, in the top 12.
Okay. Well, that's kind of surprising. Let me think. And not Paul George.
Not Paul George.
Roy Hibbert?
Roy Hibbert's not on the list. These guys are both old school, Mike.
Old school. Old school Pacers. Old like, school meaning pre-Reggie Miller or?
Oh, pre-Reggie Miller for sure.
Pre-Reggie Miller. Whew. Now I got to check my Pacers history. George McGinnis?
Nope.
Well, I'm trying to think. Pre-Reggie Miller, Indiana Pacers. I don't have nothing. I have nothing.
Okay. Billy Knight.
Okay.
He's number 5.
I've heard of Billy Knight, but I don't know that I can relay any much.
Billy Knight played 80-81. He was there a long time. I think that's why. Okay. So he was there from 75 to 82.
Okay.
I'm guessing why. Okay. And then number two, see if he's got a nickname. Let's see if I can give you this guy's nickname. I don't know. He went to Dayton. He died in 97. He played for them. His name is Roger Brown. Four-time All-Star, Hall of Famer.
Had nothing on the Raja.
The Raja is his nickname.
Okay, yeah, I had nothing on Roger Brown. So, Ohio guy, but yeah, nothing.
There you go.
I'm not all that disappointed that I didn't get those two. Those are two that have a high obscurity factor, at least for me.
So finishing out the top 12, since number six was Mel Daniels. Number seven, Vern Fleming.
Vern was probably going to be my next guess, but.
Number eight, ahead of Paul George, had a long time for the Indiana Pacers, was often injured, Danny Granger. Okay. A guy I never would have thought was on any kind of top 12 list, Jeff Foster.
All right.
Number nine, Jermaine O'Neal's number 10.
Yeah, that would have been a good guess.
And Freddie Lewis, number 12.
Yeah, there's a lot of no-name guys on that list.
Yeah, there you go. So I got you this week. I didn't get you last week. So
I'll go 3 out of 5.
I just went with Indiana because I knew we were going to talk about them tonight. So.
That's good. That's fair.
So good job. I'm proud of you for getting Rick Smits. That's an important one. It's an important one to get. So. All right, so we're going to start, like we said, we're going to talk about the ones in the middle, and I think we're just going to go from the top to the bottom in the middle, Mike. I think that makes the most sense.
Sounds good. East or West?
We're going to start with the – let's start with the West because we focused a lot of our attention on the East last week. Does that make sense?
Yep, sounds good
to
me.
So we're going to start with the Memphis Grizzlies. We didn't talk about the Memphis Grizzlies at all. Now, the Memphis Grizzlies had quite the battle with another team we're going to talk about tonight, so maybe we can just talk about them both at the same time because they're kind of – in a similar situation with third-year players, third-year stars. The Memphis Grizzlies tonight lost to New Orleans Pelicans. CJ McCollum played great in that game. But Memphis has played well this year. They're 9-6. I have to say, like, Jaws looked good, but Jaren Jackson Jr. hasn't been great.
Tonight was his first game back, man, I think.
Was it?
I think. I'm pretty sure.
He did not look great tonight.
Let me just double check, but I'm pretty sure this is his first game back. I could be wrong.
Well, that's why he wouldn't have been great.
That's correct.
I was just looking at his season stats.
Nothing's even been updated on ESPN.
I'm on the NBA app, and I see that he's played one game. So there you go. That's my own stupidity for not realizing that he hadn't played. He did have 5 blocks, though. That's pretty impressive first game back. But here's the problem, Mike. They're starting Steven Adams. He played 12 minutes. Like, I don't understand. Like, when is enough with Steven Adams? Like... what's the point in starting a guy if he's going to play 12 minutes? I don't know.
Well, I think Steven Adams, right, is a guy who his amount of playing time is dependent upon matchups and who you're playing against and who you're not playing against. So if you look at tonight's box score, I don't know how much. I don't have it in front of me. I'm going to pull it up right now. Okay. I'm looking for how much did Valanciunas play because those two guys got traded for each other. So Valanciunas
played 13 minutes.
So basically I'm guessing that it was a chess match between the two coaches of which of these two big guys is going to play how many minutes. So I'm guessing that those 13 minutes for Adams and 14 minutes for Valanciunas were probably cross-coordinated and they played at the same time, matching up with one another. So I think in the case for both of these guys, they're going to play – their amount of playing time is matchup dependent. Can they – maybe take advantage of mismatches when they want to go big, and then conversely, how do they hold up if the other team's trying to go small? Do they have to get pulled off the floor because of just defensive matchups or whatever the case might be? So I think both of those guys fall into sort of the same category. Valanciunas is probably the better offensive player and offensive rebounder. Steven Adams, I think, probably would be considered the better defensive player of those two. But you know, both of them have fit in, I think, pretty well. I think if you looked at and you talked to both teams, I think both teams would probably be pretty happy with the fact that they swapped those two guys a year ago. And yeah, Adams only playing 13 minutes. I think it's matchup dependent. And sometimes Adams is going to be a valuable piece of what they're trying to do, and other times less. And I think eventually probably Memphis is at its best once Jaren Jackson is your center and you're playing him at the sort of the small ball five. But he's always been kind of a theoretical shooter. Tonight he's 0-for-7 from three. He's a guy who I think, like, career wise is probably shooting in the low 30s from three. So even though he's a guy that theoretically can space the floor, he's never really knocked down threes at a high percentage. But if you could get the best version of Jaren Jackson Jr., then you're probably going to end up with, that's the lineup that I think Memphis probably would like to roll out there in crunch time. But clearly, again, he's back from injury, which is earlier than I think a lot of people thought. I mean, originally I think there was a lot of speculation that he was going to be back around Christmas time. So if you're Memphis, you got to be feeling pretty good that he's back. Although they found out today, I believe, that Desmond Bane's going to be out like 2 to 3 weeks with, I think, an ankle injury, if I'm not mistaken. He's going to be out 2 or 3 weeks. And Bane has been...
Speaking of ankle injuries, Zion Williamson.
Yeah, so Zion has, what, a bruised right foot is what his injury is.
Yeah, they said he might play tomorrow night. But listen, this is... Mike, I'm this is the second time he's already been injured this year.
Bane's injury is a toe, by the way, a right toe.
Oh, okay. But, like, this is the second time, and I mean, oh, we're crossing teams here, but this is the second time his Zion's already been hurt. Like, he stepped on someone's foot, and I know he finished the game out, but, like, is it concerning to you that he's already missed, like, had two injuries this year after sitting out all year last year? Is that concerning to you, or are these just freak injuries that you're like, you know, it's all right?
I think they're minor injuries. So until he starts missing multiple games, weeks, I'm not that worried about it. I mean, clearly a guy with his injury history, it never looks good when he's picking up extra injuries and having to sit out games as a result of that. So I guess, yes, you're concerned, but is it that worrisome that he's occasionally missing a game with these small injuries? I mean, a little bit, but as long as he's not out for extended periods of time with major injuries, I think you have to look at that as a win, especially when you look around the league and the landscape of the league says that guys are sitting out all the time for whatever, whether it's a minor injury, whether it's just for rest. I don't know. You don't like to see guys missing games, but yet at the same time, ultimately what you want is your guys to be healthy come playoff time. So I'm a little bit worried, but at the same time, I don't think you're at a situation where he's in danger with any of the things that he's had to this point that he's going to miss major time or start talking about missing seasons, which is what you obviously don't want. And when he's in there, just like we've said all along, when he plays – he's one of the best players in the league, at least offensively anyway. And this team, New Orleans, I think to this point, is probably based on the injuries that they've had, because I know Ingram missed 4 or 5 games with the concussion, and Zion's obviously missed a couple, and CJ McCollum has the banged up finger right now, although he played well tonight and shot it. He hasn't really shot the ball very well. I think Herb Jones is like, going into tonight's game, he was like 2-for-18 or something from three. So they haven't really played all that spectacularly well, and yet their offense is in the top 10 in the league. I think for them, ultimately, their ceiling is going to be determined by what do they do defensively. Can they get Zion to be an average defender? It seems like with his athleticism and size and the way he moves that he should be able to be a plus defender, but it pretty much seems like maybe that ship has sailed, at least for this early part of his career. But they got to get him up to at least being a guy that is functional and competent on the defensive end of the floor, because New Orleans is really good on offense. I mean, they have just multiple weapons and different ways to score, and Valanciunas can post up, and you got Ingram playing the mid-range, and you got Zion in the post and all the things that he can do handling the ball, and then you got McCollum and his ability to shoot it from all over the floor. So this team offensively, to me, it's one of the best offensive teams in the league. For them, their ceiling is what can they do and what can they be defensively. And if they can figure out that piece of it, I still think that they're that they're dangerous. Both of these teams, and I know we were talking about Memphis too, I think both of these teams are, I don't want to say legitimate title contenders, but I think both of these teams still have a legitimate chance of finishing in the top four in the West. I think the West, when you look at the standings and where things sit today, and you just look at these teams, I'm not so sure that you can call any of the teams at any place from like 1 through 8. It feels like they're all kind of, you know, you could tell me anything in terms of where these teams are going to finish. Like you look at right now, two of the top four are Portland and Utah, which certainly before the season, nobody thought that those two teams were going to be in the top four. And I think you can probably go, look, would it surprise you if Golden State ends up in the top four in the West?
No.
Yeah. I mean, I just think the only team that's in the top 10 right now that I would say would be a complete surprise, at least based on the way that they've started the season, would be Sacramento. I think anybody else, you look at it and see what they're at. I think Utah is going to probably drop. They lost again tonight, and they're not going to finish in the top four. But they're going to be better than what people thought. And unless they do a complete fire sale, it seems like they're probably going to be, I don't know, a 500 team, which probably puts you in the firmly in the play-in. So yeah. Look, the West, to me, the West is pretty wide open. Like, I don't look at any of these teams as they're constituted right now and say in a 7-game series, Team X couldn't beat Team Y. I think there's a lot of interesting potential playoff matchups and teams, and the order of which these teams finish is going to be really different. Yeah, so, which team do you like better?
I was going to ask you that question. Okay, so I think the theoretical team, I think I like New Orleans better. If Zion's healthy, I think New Orleans is the better team.
The top end of New Orleans is better.
100%.
The top end potential of New Orleans, I think, is better.
But I think the floor is better for Memphis, though. Do you agree with that statement?
Yes, I agree with that.
So it's like, you know, if you made that box and whisker plot back in school, you know, like
there you go.
The math teacher,
Some new math.
No, box and whisker plot is back when you and I were in school. You did a box and whisker.
No, I never did a box and whisker plot.
Box and whisker plots were when I
whisker,
was a kid.
Whisper, it's all the same. I never did one of those. Anyways,
this is not new math, Mike. I did this when I was in school, okay?
Okay, well, so, it's new to me, man.
But box and whisker plot, you know, I think the Pelicans is a much wider range. I think there's, you know, the ceiling is higher, but the floor is also lower. Whereas I think, you know, Memphis is like kind of a smaller, narrower gap. Like obviously there's things that could play into role here. Like Ja could get hurt and like he did last year and flip playoffs and whatnot. But I think for sure.
Are we sleeping on Memphis, though? Because I feel the same way you do. But Memphis was second in the West last year. And if you look at it, you could probably make the argument they played Golden State better than anybody, including the Celtics, who played the Warriors in the finals. I think you could argue that Memphis gave them the best series and the most difficulty. And Ja just continues to be absolutely incredible.
Did you see the steal he had tonight or no?
No, I didn't see it.
So he had his back to the inbounder, and he timed the steal. He turned and jumped and grabbed the ball. Like, his back was to the inbounder, turned and jumped. He just like read the play, turned and jumped, and then went coast to coast behind his back and made a layup. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful, beautiful play. But
he's just electric and just from his athleticism. And then one of the things that I've always loved about him, and we've talked about it back since before the NBA draft, that his ability to pass the ball and just – he's a guy that people want to play with. I mean, you can just tell when you watch the Grizzlies play that Morant cares about his team and his team cares about him. And that's really what it's all about. I mean, you just look at what he's doing. He's averaging almost 29 a game, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. He's shooting right now 41% on threes. So, if that shooting is real, then, man, I mean, you just I don't know how you guard the guy, because he's just so fast and so quick and so athletic that I'm not sure what you're supposed to do I'm not sure what you're supposed to do with him because he's one of the most fun players to watch in the entire league. And so I think part of me feels like we're sleeping on Memphis, that we're not giving them enough credit. But I do think that your statement of New Orleans has a higher ceiling and the Grizzlies have a higher floor, I think is accurate. And yeah, both of these teams are going to be right there. If they stay healthy, I think both teams are going to be right there, certainly to grab a top six spot, if not a home court advantage slot in the Western Conference. And then I don't think it's unrealistic. The best versions of each of these teams could make the NBA Finals. I think that, is it likely that would happen? Probably not, but I don't think it's completely outside the realm of possibility that come June you have New Orleans or Memphis as the Western Conference representative. Yeah. I don't think that's crazy at all.
I don't think that's crazy either. All right. So we'll turn our attention to two other teams in the West that also faced off tonight, Mike. This is very convenient for our podcast purposes. The Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Clippers. What a game. I don't know if you caught any of it. Probably not, because you don't have
I was at my son's scrimmage tonight for most of the night. So,
man, it felt like a playoff game. As I had it on in the background, was watching Luka, another fantastic night. Let me just rattle off Luka's stats tonight, and then his last three games against the Clippers. Okay, so tonight Luka went 35-11, 5-3 steals. Okay, he entered tonight the top 10 points for players before they turned 24 years old, which shouldn't probably be a surprise. Okay, in the NBA history, his other last two games against the Clippers, he scored 45. 15-8 and 51-9-6. So
I guess tonight was a bad game. They shut him down.
They shut him down big time. the Mavericks. My big thing is I don't know if you've been listening. I'm sure you've been listening to Simmons and the mismatch, but they're talking about his usage rate being so high. Like, how sustainable is this?
The answer to that question
is not.
It's not sustainable from a standpoint of, can you win at the highest level playing this way? I don't think you can. I don't think it's ever been done. I can go back to Michael Jordan when he was putting up just incredible stat lines early in his career and just couldn't get over the hump and get the Bulls to the finals. You have to have help, and I just don't think that right now he has.
Dorian Finney-Smith.
He just doesn't have enough, right? You need one more guy who is a tier below Luka, but a tier above the Dinwiddie, Christian Wood.
Well, what's ironic is they had that guy, and he walked, right?
Well, I mean,
are you not sold on Brunson?
Look, no, it's not that I'm not sold on Brunson. I like Brunson, but I don't think Brunson is the second best player on a championship team, even if your best player is arguably the best player in the league so far through 12 games. I just don't know that you need somebody else that is – I think you need a two-way player, first of all, next to Luka. Although his defense has been better this year, and there's definitely more of an effort that he's putting in on that end of the floor. And if that's real and that sustains, that's going to be something that for sure helps Dallas without question. But I just think they're still one guy away, and I don't know if there's a pathway for them to be able to do that this season. It feels like that's something that they're going to have to possibly address in the offseason, where they take some of their picks that they have. I think they have one more pick going out this year from the Porzingis trade, and then after this season, then they have control over all their draft picks from that point forward. So that being the case, they might be able to package some of that stuff up along with a couple players and maybe find that next star that can play next to Luka. I think the worry is, and maybe it's not a worry with the Mavericks, but it's something that I think about, is once you kind of get a guy playing this way where basically everything runs through him, it's kind of like what we used to talk about with James Harden, right? And maybe it's a personal distaste for Harden versus the way Luka plays versus the way that Harden plays. But it's a similar setup in that basically everything that Dallas does, at least when Luka's on the floor, runs through
him. Now, when he's off the floor, I think Dinwiddie gets an opportunity to go ahead and do some stuff. But when Luka's on the floor, the ball is pretty much in his hands. It's not like he's deferring to Dinwiddie and then going and spotting up or moving off the ball. He's pretty much still orchestrating and doing everything when he's on the floor. And that gets tiring. And that's tough on the other players who don't get to touch the ball as much. So is it sustainable in terms of can Luka sustain this statistical pace for the rest of the season? To that, I would say yes. To the fact of, is it sustainable where they can win at the highest level playing this way? I mean, they made it to the Western Conference Finals last year, although they weren't super competitive with the Warriors in that series. But I just don't know that you can win a title, even a guy that is playing at the level that Luka's playing at, which is, again, for his age. There's probably nobody that's been statistically better. And when you watch him and you see the way he manipulates defenses and the strength and craftiness that he has, because he's not, as we've said many times, he's not that quick. But man, does that guy use his body, and man, does he know how to move and footwork and do all the things that you'd want to teach a young basketball player to be able to do. He does all of those things. And there's just no way you can defend him, because he figures out how he's being guarded. He figures out what, how you're defending the pick and roll. And then he's not only a great scorer, but he's also a guy who his passing is just incredible. His anticipation and what he's doing. And right now, like I'm looking at his statistics right now, he's only shooting 28% from three, and he's still averaging 35 a game. So if he, even if he gets back to his career average, which is, I mean, still, which is funny, he's still a below average 3-point shooter. He only shoots 33.5% for his career. So if he ever can get that up in the 37-38% range, which certainly seems doable, the sky's the limit for him. But Dallas, the way they're constituted, I don't think they can make a run to the NBA Finals the way they're constructed now. I agree,
and I agree the same thing about the Clippers, primarily because of Kawhi's situation. Like, the Clippers are clearly a well-coached team. I mean, it is Ty Lue. He knows what he's doing. They play together. I mean, they beat the Cavs, and I don't really want to spend a lot of time talking about the Cavs today because we've been talking about them, but the Cavs are in a funk right now, so they got to figure that out. But big matchup tomorrow. But they, like, the Clippers have looked good. They've been hot and cold, though, and tonight, obviously, they lost. They're 8-7, so they're not in a terrible position. But once again, do I see this team? I mean, I look at all the teams above them in the West. I think, really, if Kawhi's healthy, are they better than the Pelicans? I don't think so. Are they better than Memphis? I don't think so. Are they better than Dallas? Maybe, because Dallas is so reliant on Luka, they could beat Dallas if Kawhi's there. Are they better than Phoenix? Probably not. Are they better than Utah? I'm probably willing to say they're better than Utah, and Utah's overperforming. But at the same time, I mean, Utah's 10-6. Like, at some point, it's not a coincidence. It's, you know, it's not just happening. It's
you are, you know, what your record says you are.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Are they better than Denver? I don't think so. Are they better than Portland? Once again, Portland overperforming, but they're doing well, and I think it's Portland winning tonight too. Portland's beating the Spurs here. There's still a whole quarter to play, but I don't know. Oh man, Mike, the score in the Sacramento game. It's the third quarter. I'm sorry to take us off the beaten path here for a second. Sacramento 115, the Nets 79. It's the third quarter.
It's a lot of points. Brooklyn doesn't play much defense. Let's put it that way.
Oof, that's a lot of points. Anyways, I think the Clippers are all going to be dependent on, is Kawhi able to even play basketball anymore? Like, I know I joke about Zion and his ability to play basketball, and is he going to get to 250 games? Is Kawhi Leonard going to play basketball?
I think in the last 5 years, I can't remember exactly what the number is, but Kawhi has played in the last 5 years. I want to say it's like I mean, it's ridiculously low. It's like 100 games or 120 games, something like that. And I just don't think you can rely on him at this point. And so I'd say the Clippers are probably right about where I would expect them to finish in the regular season. I think they're going to be somewhere in that. They're definitely going to be somewhere in the play-in range. There's no way the Clippers are cracking this top six. I don't see it.
So 2019. So we'll start with, let's see, this year he's played two. Yep. Last year, obviously, he didn't play at all. The year before that, he played 52 games. The year before that, he played 57 games.
All right, so that takes him to 111.
The year before that, he played 60 games.
All right, so he's played 170 games in 5 years.
Yeah, and the year before that, he played 9.
Okay, so that's like, let's say that's 180 games in six years.
That's basically three. So I don't think that's regular season games. That's not postseason. Right,
so that's 30. That's 30 games a season in 6 years. That's not good. That's not good.
And he was healthy the rest of the time in his career before that. So
yeah, but that quad injury that he had at the end of San Antonio, whatever that thing was, I think just completely threw him off kilter, and somehow he was able to salvage that one healthy playoff run. And even if you remember back to that playoff run with the Raptors, at times during that playoffs, it looked like he was dragging his leg around, and he was able to gut it out, and obviously was the MVP of the finals and played incredibly well in that entire playoff run and was well deserved of the finals MVP. But he still wasn't 100% healthy. I mean, you could see him at times during that point in his career dragging that leg around, and he just hasn't been able to overcome it. And there's nothing to suggest that he's suddenly going to be able to be healthy for 2 months when he hasn't been healthy for years now at this point. So
yeah.
I think the Clippers at number 8 is probably a fair assessment for where they're going to be. I think they're going to end up somewhere in that play-in round, and I don't think they're going to be able to crack the top 6 of this Western Conference. I just don't see it.
I agree. All right, the last team in the West is the Spurs. And once again, they're playing better than we thought they were going to play. Now, will they sustain it? I don't know. What was the one factor we said, Mike? What was the one factor that we said could allow for the Spurs to perform at a better rate than we think?
Greg Popovich?
100%. And I mean, they're doing it. I mean, do they have an all-star on their team?
No, they don't have an all-star.
I mean,
Keldon Johnson is probably their best player, and then
not Poeltl?
Jakob Poeltl.
He dropped 20. He's got 21 tonight in 21 minutes.
Poeltl's a good player. He's not an all-star player.
I know. I'm just messing with you, Mike.
Keldon Johnson's a good player. Devin Vassell is a good player. I know there's a lot of talk. I read somewhere, I don't know if it was on Twitter or somewhere I saw it, that, you know, imagine if the Cavs had drafted Devin Vassell instead of Isaac Okoro in that draft. Vassell right now is averaging 19 a game. And he is shooting, let me see how many threes he's making a game. So he's shooting 41% from three on 7.5 attempts per game.
He's four out of seven tonight.
Yeah. So, yeah, that guy would look pretty good in the Cavs lineup.
Yeah. But we probably wouldn't have Donovan Mitchell if he was.
Yeah. There's a million things to say. I'm just saying. There was some speculation there. So look, I think if you look at what the Spurs have, you have two young guys who are pretty good in Keldon Johnson and Devin Vassell. Are either one of those guys a future all-star? I don't think so, but are they both probably top quality starters? I would say probably yes. And then after that, you've got a mix of veterans and young guys, and they got Sochan from Baylor, and he's been a guy that people like and the things that he's been able to do defensively and rebounding.
So you're out on the Spurs being a contend, being a playoff.
They're not going to make the play-in. They will be in the bottom. They will be in the bottom five for sure, both by choice and just by the nature of what they are. So yeah, I expect San Antonio to finish in the bottom five at some point.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Move on to the East, Mike. And,
okay.
I guess we'll start with Washington. Kyle Kuzma, baby. It's the Kuzma show. We're all living in it. What do you think?
Washington is just like the fact that they're 8-6 to me. Well, last year they started, I think they started 10-3 last year. But the fact that they are 8-6, they've won four straight with just their roster. It's just so weird because they have all these guys that they've drafted. So homegrown draft picks that none of them at this point really are. I don't think you can call any one of those guys a top quality starter. So you look at Hachimura, Kispert, Avdija. I'm just not sure what this team, Johnny Davis, who their first round pick this year, who's currently toiling away in the G League, doesn't look like he's going to be able to be too helpful this year.
How about their 8-6, Mike, and in the NBA, they're 29th in scoring in the NBA, and they're 8-6.
Well, and are they really a great defensive team? Like, do you look at them and you say, okay, what are they? So what they do have right now is Porzingis has been playing really well to this point. 20 a game, 8 rebounds, a block and a half. Been healthy the entire season. He sat out one game so far this whole season. And look, he's a guy who, when he's been healthy, he's been a beneficial player. When he was with the Knicks, obviously, was probably when he was at his best before he started having the leg injuries. Then even when he went to Dallas, he never was really a good fit next to Luka, but when he was healthy, he made them better, and he played well when he played. He just didn't play often enough, and then Dallas kind of soured on him and traded him to Washington, and he's been good for the Wizards. Kuzma's been good for the Wizards this year. Beal's down.
He's played 9 games out of the 14, so.
And down from his league leading scoring, whatever, 2 years ago, I think that was when he was up around 32 a game. But yeah, it's kind of confounding that this team's 8-6. And I don't really think when you look at where they are right now, I mean, there's no way this team finishes in the top six. I think that there's a chance that they can hold on into the play-in based on the teams that are below them, but there's no way this team sticks in the top six. I don't see that in any way, shape, or form.
I agree. They seem like Bradley Beal is going to get injured, and he's already been injured. He's going to miss games. Porzingis is going to miss games. Okay. They're just not going to be able to do it.
It's just a team of average. It's a team of average players. I mean, their two best players are Porzingis and Beal, who are good players, but they're two guys that, I don't know. They don't get you very excited. And then the rest of the roster is just filled with eh. And so I don't see this team being able to stay in the five slot. They're not going to stay up in the top six. There's no way.
Okay, I agree. All right, the next team, Toronto Raptors. I'll be honest with you, Mike. I've watched, other than the first game of the season, I've watched no Toronto Raptors basketball. And I don't know much about, other than the fact that now Pascal Siakam's hurt. And he's out, I don't know. I know they said 2 weeks he was going to be reevaluated, right? With an abductor strain. Is that accurate?
It was like 2 to 3 weeks they estimated he was going to be out. He's been phenomenal. I mean, you look at what he's done, Siakam, up until this point, pre-injury, and he was averaging 25, 9, and 8, basically. So you're looking at, he was third team All-NBA last year, and the stats across the board weren't nearly as good as that. So playing at that level, man, is he a second team NBA, All-NBA guy? Maybe.
Maybe if he doesn't miss a lot. I mean, that's the big question.
I mean, depending on that, yeah. And he's got to obviously sustain that throughout the season. But I guess my point is that he's played really, really, really well. Then you look down the list at the other guys that we have, and Van Vliet is just, he's a guy who you look at him and you just can't really believe that he's as productive as he is.
And he's missed five games too already, Mike.
Yeah, and but you look at his statistics and you look at what that guy does, and he's tough as nails.
He's a better shooter version of Matthew Dellavedova. True or false?
I mean, he's a way better all-around player than Dellavedova was. I mean, Van Vliet gets to the rim and does some things near the basket that guys his size have no business being able to do. That guy, he's tough, and he's come through in big moments, and he's definitely a guy
Is he a better defender than Dellavedova was?
I mean, I would say probably yes, but I don't know. I don't know that even Dellavedova, I'm not sure that you'd call him a great defensive player. He was more just a guy who was annoying to play against just because of his style of play.
Yeah.
So, but look, Toronto has lots of big, rangy defenders that can guard multiple positions. Ananobi's been really good on defense this year, and his offensive game continues to evolve. I don't know that he's ever going to become a first-rate scorer, but he's averaging about 17. So he's putting up 17 a game. So if you can have all NBA defensive team ability on that end and then put up 17 a game on the other end, that's a pretty useful player that any team would want. And then Gary Trent, who's obviously known mostly for his ability to shoot the ball, I think he's continued to do that, although he's putting up 7 threes a game. He's only shooting 32% right now. You expect that to go up as the season goes along. And it looks like Koloko, the center that they got from Arizona in the draft, he's been a guy that's really had an impact on their defense. And then Scotty Barnes. And I'm still not sure exactly what the idealized version of Scotty Barnes is, what that looks like, because I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that's going to have a really reliable jump shot. So the question then becomes, all right, what is he or what does he do? At his size, I wish Evan Mobley had his handle. If you gave Scotty Barnes his handle to Evan Mobley, whew, man, you'd unlock a whole bunch of things that Mobley could do well. And Scotty Barnes handles the ball really well. He's a good passer. He can go inside and score. I just worry about his potential long-term as a scorer, because if you project him out to be the best player on a team, you're obviously going to need him to be more of a scoring threat. And I just think that his shot, I think it's going to hold him back. He still has lots and lots of things that you'd like about him, and he's going to be a very, very good player in the league for a long, long time. I just wonder about his ceiling without improving that shot. I'm not sure how high his ceiling ultimately is. Can he be first or second team all NBA guy the way he is now. I'm not sure. He strikes me more as he's going to be a guy that's a jack of all trades, that every team's going to want him on their team because of his size and the skills that he has. But I think the lack of scoring is going to hold him back, is my guess, at least where he is now.
Yeah.
But I like Toronto. I like Toronto. If Toronto's healthy, they're a top six team to me in the East for sure.
Yep, I agree. They've got to be healthy though. They've only had two players play in all their games this year.
Yep.
So OG and Koloko. Yeah.
Kokomo. Right.
Kokomo.
Bermuda, Bahama. All right. Anyway.
Yep. All right. Next team. Your favorite team to talk about. The Philadelphia 76ers. Listen, Embiid 59 yesterday, pulling out a lot of bags of tricks. He's averaging 32 points per game. 32 points. How many rebounds is he averaging? 32, 10, and 4. Once again, Embiid's looked really good. He's only played 10 of the games so far, the 14. Harden's obviously injured and is going to be out for a bit. Which, I don't know, they seem to be playing better since he's been out, so I don't know.
That's a surprise.
Tobias Harris has not played well this year, in my opinion. He's averaging 14 a game. I mean, it's the third most points on the team, but it's definitely down, and you would have thought, like, with Harden out, his role would have been increased. But he's not doing a lot. I think Daniel House, when he signed up for James Harden 2.0, I don't think he realized he was going to play 18 minutes a game or 17 minutes a game. He probably was looking forward to just hanging out and not having to play that much, but he's been playing a lot.
I think here's the thing with Philadelphia. One, we know what Embiid is when he's at his best. He's pretty much unguardable because of his ability to shoot, his ability to put it on the floor, and then he's so good at drawing fouls. So he gets to the foul line. And then when he gets to the foul line, he's like an 85% free throw shooter. So offensively, what he can do, and then defensively, when he's engaged and at his best, Embiid's one of the five best players in the league when he's at his best. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The problem with Embiid is and has been, what kind of shape is he in, and can you count on him for four playoff rounds in the spring? And I would still argue that the answer to that question is no, based on past history. He's going to have to show that he can do that and he can carry a team, because he hasn't demonstrated that he can play four quarters of seven straight games to carry his team to a series win. And then, as I've said millions of times, if your second banana or your first banana is James Harden, that's not going to go well. So I don't like the combination of Embiid's iffy injury / conditioning history combined with the repeated playoff failures of James Harden. I don't like this team's postseason chances today any more than I've liked it at any point certainly since Harden's been there, and even going back to the days of Embiid and Simmons. There's just too many questions about Embiid, and obviously the questions to me about James Harden have already been answered, so there's no need to even discuss that. I think the thing with Philadelphia is you look at what people talked about in the offseason, was that they've added a ton of depth, and that was going to allow them to rest guys and to be able to rely more on their reserves to carry them through the regular season. That was going to get them a lot of regular season wins. And I just look at who are their guys that they brought in, that they signed, that they thought were going to have a huge impact. So PJ Tucker, he's averaging 4.9 points a game. Harrell's averaging 4.3. Daniel House is averaging 3.9. Bibles at 1.5. Paul Reed, 0.5 points per game. I mean, he's got like this bench unit that everybody talked about over the summer. I just personally, I don't see it. I think this team is flawed, and Embiid's tremendous, but I don't know. I certainly don't think that most people, the consensus was that they were in that top grouping with Boston and Milwaukee and Philly. That was the tier that most quote-unquote experts had before the season started. I don't think there's any way that this team is one of the top three teams in the East. I just, there's no way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they just they've got James Harden on their team, so they're not. There you go. That's all I need to say.
Now, could they finish? I think there's probably a good chance they get up to the top six, but they're not one of the three. They're not one of the three best teams in the Eastern Conference. There's no way, especially not playoff time. Yeah. Maybe in the regular season they creep into the top six, but I would be stunned if they win. Maybe they win a round, depending on who the matchup is, but I don't see them. There's no way they're winning two rounds to get in the Eastern Conference Finals with this team. There's no way.
Yep. All right. Three more teams to talk about, Mike. And we don't have to. I don't think we have to spend too long on these.
Okay.
The Indiana Pacers. They are third in the league in scoring, Mike. Can you believe that? Third in the league in scoring, averaging 117 points per game.
And part of it's the pace you play at, right? Part of that. And they've got a really good point guard. Halliburton's legit,
Mathurin. I think Mathurin is going to be a great player. And
the thing with Mathurin is, one, he's averaging what, like 21 a game, I think.
He's 19.9.
All right, so he's at 19.9 right now. He's averaging 4 rebounds, only 2.3 assists to 2.4 turnovers. So that's a little bit concerning. But the one thing that he does do that usually portends very well is he gets to the line. So I know we talked about that with Banchero, that he's getting to the line almost 8 times a game. Mathurin as a guard is getting to the line 6 times a game, and then he shoots 83% when he gets there. So to me, these two guys, Halliburton and Mathurin, you're talking about the long-term prognosis for rebuilding.
Yeah.
Those are two guys who are young, who complement each other, and that Halliburton's a pass-first guy. Now, he's scoring 20-some a game, but he's a pass-first. That's his mentality. He's a pass-first guy, whereas Mathurin's a shoot-first guy. And Mathurin's so athletic and explosive going to the basket, and then he's got a beautiful shooting stroke as well. And then you have Halliburton, who's more methodical and thinks the game and is going to set people up. And I think you look at what this team has, Buddy Hield and Miles Turner may or may not be part of the future of this team as soon as this season. Maybe they get dealt. It's been talked about a lot, obviously, with the Lakers, but there's probably other teams that when we get to the trading deadline that would be interested in having Buddy Hield as a shooter and Miles Turner, what he can bring as a center that can spread the floor and shoot threes. But I think that the building blocks are obviously Mathurin and Halliburton, but then you also have Chris Duarte, who's out right now with an injury, but he's a guy they drafted last year that has proven to be a pretty effective player. They got Nesmith from the Celtics, who's kind of fits on that same timeline. And so I think this team, you're looking at basically what can we do moving forward around this backcourt. And that's where Indiana's going to kind of – that's where their future lies. And I would expect this team to sink down into the bottom five eventually. And if that's where they settle and they end up getting a really good draft pick and getting an opportunity to add another good player to the mix, they certainly have two guys that are keepers that long-term – Those two guys are going to be two guys you're going to build around in Mathurin and Halliburton.
Yep. All right. So do you predict them? Will they be in the play-in, or are they going to sell and be out?
They're
going to
be out. They'll be in the bottom five. I mean, they may finish ahead. They'll probably finish like 11th because I think they're probably better than Detroit. They're better than
Detroit's
Orlando.
Clearly tanking, right? Now
I don't know. I mean, Cade's out right now.
Yeah, and then the lineup that they trotted out last night to start. They pulled the Cavs yesterday. Three guys that were 6'11 and bigger started in their lineup yesterday.
All right, well, there you go. Yeah, Detroit's just not very good. Look,
I overestimated them. I thought they were going to be
better. I thought they'd be better than what they were, than what they've been. They haven't really honestly been very competitive, is the honest truth.
100%.
It's been a struggle for them. And I don't know, you look at the bottom. I know we talked about that last week, but I'm not so sure that, you know, whose core would you rather have, Orlando or Detroit's? I think I'd rather have Orlando's core.
Oh, it's not even a question to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd rather have Orlando's core. But
yep. Okay.
Look, Ivy's going to be good. Cade's going to be good. I just think Banchero is proven to be, I think he's going to be better than what Cade's going to be eventually, yep. if not yep. already.
All right, the last two teams. Two big markets, the Knicks and the Bulls. The Knicks, 7-7. You know, I've not watched a minute of New York Knicks basketball this year. So
with the Knicks, I think the big thing is that they haven't been very good defensively, which for a Tibbs team, I think has left people disappointed. And then I think if you look up and down their roster, what do they really have that is
Derrick Rose
going to be part of a championship team, right?
Jalen Brunson.
Your star, the guy they drafted highest in the draft is RJ Barrett. And I think Barrett's a good player, but to me, I think Barrett tops out even at the very, very highest end. I think he's the third best player on a really good team because I'm just not sure exactly what it is that he does well. He's not a great shooter. He's a guy who, yeah, he can have the ball in his hands and he can do some stuff, but he's not an A-plus playmaker. So I don't know exactly where he fits. If he's your primary ball handler, you're probably not going to be very good. And if he's playing a ton off the ball, he's not really that good of a shooter to be able to just spot up. So I'm not sure exactly what his role is on a great team. And that was your one shot. Obviously, they get the third pick in a draft that produces Zion and Ja. So clearly getting the third pick in that draft is quite the consolation prize. So that to me, I think, sets them back. And then you just look at the rest of the roster, and I'm just not sure what this team is. I think 500, if they finish 500, I think they'd have to be really happy in the Eastern Conference with this roster. They're just, I don't know. What's Obi Toppin?
I really liked Emmanuel Quickley, but he's very underwhelming this year. I don't know. Something about him playing, like when I watched him play last year, like I was super encouraged. And then, I don't know, he just looks blah to me. Like,
well, part of it is, again, Tibbs doesn't necessarily give these guys a ton of minutes, right? So I think that's the argument that a lot of people would like to see Toppin play more.
Oh, yeah. That's all over the social media. See, free Obi.
So, like, Julius Randle, he had the one great year, but
made if you have Julius money, Randle, made a lot of money after that one year.
I mean, I look at Randle sort of almost in the same vein as I look at RJ Barrett, where Julius Randle's a good player and he does lots of different things. I mean, he's averaging right now this season, he's averaging 21, 9, and 3.5. So that's clearly a productive player. But the problem is, if he's your best player and you're putting the ball in his hands, what's your ceiling compared to other guys who do the same thing that he does, but just do it way at a way higher level? So I don't know. To me, this team's just kind of floating in mediocrity, and I don't know what the long-term plan is for them. Obviously, it's always to try to get a star in there, but they whiffed on the Donovan Mitchell situation and misread that. And you could say, well, that they were lucky for that, or they weren't lucky for that, or depending on whatever your opinion is on Donovan Mitchell or what he would have looked like on the Knicks versus what he's looked like on the Cavs at this point. But the fact is that the Knicks have been wishing for a star for 10 years now, since they first traded with Denver to get Carmelo. And look, nobody comes there. They haven't been able to bring in a star in 10 years. And to think that that's going to change, there's no real indication that that's what's going to happen. So this team, like I said, I think they'd be lucky. I think they'd be very, very happy and fortunate to go 500. I think they're more likely to finish below 500. And I think they're a 9 or 10 when all is said and done, somewhere in that range probably.
I agree. Listen, I'm very underwhelmed. That's what I'll say. Underwhelmed by the New York Knicks.
All right, there you go.
The last team to talk about, another team that to me has been underwhelming, the Chicago Bulls. Obviously, you know, there's been injuries. Lonzo's, do they even have any kind of timeline on him?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, listen, just like looking at their team, DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine are playing all right. Obviously, DeRozan's not doing as well as he did last year. He's played in every game. Levine's only played 10 games. Pat Williams is back, but he doesn't look right from what I can see. I mean,
he's fine. Again, they need him. He was their one swing at a high draft pick, and I don't know that he's a miss, but he's also not a guy that's popped where he's going to be an all-star. It doesn't look like that's the trajectory that he's going to be on. And if he's not that type of player, then I'm not sure what you're doing with this team. Now, look, they're competent, and any given night with DeRozan and Levine,
they're
putting up numbers.
Kind of like Indiana, right? They're competent.
They can beat you. I mean, Chicago's better than Indiana, and they're, I think, over the course of the season, that'll prove itself out because DeRozan and Levine are far, you know, they're a little bit further along in their career than Halliburton and Mathurin at this point. And they also have some better players, I think, around them than what Indiana has. But this team still, I look at them similar to New York. Like, what's the plan? Like, how are we getting from where we are now in the middle of the pack to be able to break out into that top six? I just, even if you put Lonzo back in this mix, I don't see where this team can overcome some of the teams that are ahead of them in the Eastern Conference. To me, it doesn't, like, this roster just doesn't look like a roster that's made to compete for a top four seed in the future. Especially DeRozan, again, is going to continue to age, and he's, as you said, he's playing well this year, but he's not at the level that he was last year where he was averaging like 28, 29 a game. He's down at 24, and he's been good, but not as good as he was last season. And Levine has clearly dropped off from his peak after the knee injuries that he's had and just the problems that he's had with his lower leg injuries over the last couple of years has kind of taken away a little bit of his explosiveness around the rim. So this team has talent, but I just don't know where it's going. To me, it's probably a 500 team or slightly below that. I would expect them to hang in the play-in race just because the teams below them are worse or they're blatantly going to be tanking by the end of the season. So I think Chicago ends up in the play-in spot, probably in one of either the 9 or the 10.
Yep. I agree. They're going to be a play-in team. I don't see them being in the top six at all. I think, obviously, Lavino's probably going to get hurt again. DeRozan's going to have to start to sit out every once in a while because he's just getting old. He's an old man. They got to load manage. Load manage, right? That's what they do in the NBA now.
Yep. So, I agree.
All righty.
1 minute. 1 minute on the Cavs.
Sure.
One minute. I have one take on the Cavs.
I have one take too. Here it is.
All right. Okay.
Caris LeVert needs to be gone. Here's why.
Okay. Why?
He's a ball stopper. He's pointless on the defensive end of the floor. I just watch him, and he's not at fault for the collapses. He's not sole to blame. But I just watch, every time when we were down the stretch, and they played a little too much hero ball down the stretch. But he gets the ball, and the movement stops. Everyone just stands there, and he just dribbles around, and it looks like every single time he puts the ball on the floor that he's going to lose the ball. I don't know. I know we've talked about it before, but he doesn't look like he knows what he's doing with the basketball at times.
He's just a weird player. He plays sort of in a herky-jerky way. He does have to put the ball on the floor a lot. I like his passing this year has been improved over what it was in previous seasons, and certainly with what he looked like towards the end of the season with the Cavs last year. I don't really like him necessarily in the starting lineup. I don't mind him as a creative player off the bench or a guy that can score for you with your second unit. I'm not sure he's the ideal fit as the fifth guy in this lineup. I'm not sure the ideal fifth guy is on the roster at this point. I think Dean Wade has probably been the best. Honestly, I'd like to see Lamar Stevens get a little bit more opportunity. Not that he'd be a perfect fit either, but I'd like to see LeVert play more with the second unit, because I just think he's redundant with Mitchell and Garland, especially once Garland's been back and those two are playing together. So I agree with you to a certain extent. I don't want to see him completely disappear, but I think there's got to be a better option for that starting lineup. But maybe there isn't. Look, you look down up and down the roster and, you know, there's nobody that leaps out of it. You're like, God, this guy is way, way, way better than what Caris LeVert can be. And LeVert's had some really good games and he's had some stinkers, which has kind of been the pattern throughout his career. My take on the Cavs is, I told you this right after the Clippers game, that when it was 112-100 and the Cavs were 8-1 and they had been down to the Clippers for three quarters, and then they just came out in the beginning of the fourth quarter and just kind of methodically were tearing the Clippers apart. And I was just about to text you, say, wow, this team is just methodically going about its business and dismantling good teams and just doing it in so many different ways with what they could do defensively, the two big guys inside, and then the shot making of Mitchell and Garland. And then, boom, they fall apart against the Clippers. Then they lose the Sacramento game after they were winning for most of that game. Then Golden State, they're up 4 with 3 minutes to go, and Steph kind of goes off, and they go cold and don't make anything.
And then Klay Thompson illegally screens a guy.
Well, whatever. You can't completely blame the collapse on the officials. They brought it on themselves. And then you come home, and Mitchell and Allen sit out, and you lose to Minnesota. You give up 40 points in the first quarter, and obviously then Garland has the huge fourth quarter. But it just felt like, it sounds silly to say, but it's almost like you finish off that Clippers game and it feels like the momentum stays and things on that road trip go completely differently. There's still a lot of, I don't know if you saw the article on ESPN today about the Cavs, that there was four things that I think it was Kirk Goldsberry wrote about, just saying that basically there were four characteristics of the Cavs that bode well for the fact that they can continue to do well and play well despite the fact that they've lost four in a row. And it was just interesting to kind of go through and talked about how their defense and just what they can do on the defensive end of the floor. The fact that Mitchell has brought so much three-point shooting, I think, has been a big factor in what they do. And Mitchell and Garland are going to continue to be, I think, really difficult to be able to defend. So this team, I think, is going to be fine. I'm a little bit, again, disappointed that they've lost four in a row. But I think when you look at what they are and who they are, I think this team for sure is going to finish in the top six. And I think they should finish in the top four based on what they have. But again, you got to stay healthy, just like every other team, right? The caveat is always, if your guys aren't healthy, then suddenly things can take a turn. Especially it feels like there's not an easy game. You look around the league and every night you're seeing, wow, how'd this team beat that team? And part of it is load managing. You're like, all right, who's playing? You start looking at the lineups and this guy's in, this guy's out. And so there's a lot of weird things that are going on, which I think leads to a lot of the weird results that we're seeing across the league. But I also think part of the weird result is that the bad teams are as good as they've ever been, at least that I can remember in the last 10 years. I think the worst teams are...
There's a lot of parity.
The worst team, are far better than what they used to be. And I don't think this year, especially, I don't think there's a super team. Like, there's no three-star
team. Sacramento Kings, baby. 153 points tonight. 153, right, Mike.
It's a lot of points. That's a lot of points they put up. So, Cavs, I think, are going to be fine, but they definitely need to right the ship, and it's going to be tough tomorrow night against Milwaukee. I think Giannis is now back, and so Middleton, I don't know how far away he is from making his return, but hopefully Allen and Mitchell will be back for that game, and Cavs can pull one out on the road.
Yep,
doesn't seem likely against Milwaukee, but we'll see. We'll see.
Milwaukee's lost two in a row, so let's go.
You never know. Again, it just shows you everybody's this league right now, it's topsy-turvy, and you just don't know night to night what you're going to get from anybody. So,
well, speaking of topsy-turvy, those Browns, baby.
I don't even know what to tell you.
Hey, here's what I'm going to tell you. They're predicting 2 to 4 feet of snow in Buffalo on Sunday.
All right. Well, that'll be good. That'd
be
at least
fun. Not good for my fantasy team. I was really looking forward to this week.
That would at least be fun to watch. There's nothing better than a good snow game.
I have Stephon Diggs on all of my fantasy football teams.
Okay.
And I was really looking forward to this matchup with the Browns this week. But if
hey, this Browns defense is getting it done, man. Just think if we had an average defense.
Oh, we would be 7-2 or
something. And we're playing with a backup quarterback.
Yep.
The offense hasn't been the problem. I mean, the offense clearly has had its moments that haven't been good, but the defense has been just horrendous beyond description. I mean, just absolutely horrible. So, all right, let's leave it there. I don't want to do any Browns talk.
Okay.
That's enough of that.
Congrats to Terry Francona. There you go. I'm going to throw that in there too.
All right, nice. Get some more Cleveland talk.
You know he won Manager of the Year, right?
Congratulations to Tito.
There you go.
All right. We will leave it there. Thank you for checking out this week's episode on the NBA. We appreciate you sticking with us. And we'll be back next week with more NBA talk. Make sure you check out the different episodes that we have coming out for our interviews. I know this week coming up on Friday, I'm putting out one that will be promoting a local event here in Cleveland, the Cleveland Basketball Classic that was organized by Danny Gallagher, who is the girls coach at Magnificat High School. It's going to be a great high school basketball event, 10 games over 2 days, 5 girls games, 5 boys games over Thanksgiving weekend. So you'll get to hear more about that on our Friday pod. So make sure you check that one out. And thanks for listening tonight, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.